Now, my next story, it sounds a little bit like the plot of a movie. You know, up-and-coming artists on the rise, approached by charismatic gallerists to sell their work, only to never see the kind of the correct money that they're owed, or in some cases even their unsold paintings again. Well, this is the situation that is actually unfolding around Melbourne gallerist Tristan Koenig, and he has had a range, he's had a gallery down in Melbourne. He's represented a range of artists. And one of the artists who's found themselves in this position is South Coast artist Lara Merritt. And she joins us this morning. Lara, good morning. How are you?
Oh, hi, Willie. I'm great. Thanks. I'm a bit exhausted from last week, but good.
Oh, my God. I can imagine. Now, when did you feel that things were not as they should be with your situation in this?
So I sort of left quite a few paintings with him in stock, and that's quite normal for an artist to do that. But I think it was when I had a couple of big paintings sell for a collection, and so that was a very straightforward transaction. It wasn't connected to an exhibition, and I waited for the payment for that, and it didn't come. And then I sort of kept sending off my invoices, and eventually I got 50% of the amount of those sort of two large works. Then I just kept trying, and I couldn't get the rest of the payment. So I think at that stage I figured out that his business, or he was really struggling to pay his bills. I didn't really know about anybody else or other artists owed money. And I got really worried about I had 18 works in his collection and his storage. And so at that stage, I just thought, okay, I really need to get my work back. You know, you hear horror stories of galleries closing and then all that stock just disappears. Like it sort of goes into receivership and people never get their works back. So, I think that's when the alarm bells rang. And when he didn't let me collect the work, I think that's when I got really angry, frustrated, quite upset, and it was sort of a next level of kind of inconvenience.
Inconvenience. Oh my God, you're so kind. I would have been using a much different word. I just got goosebumps when you were like, he wouldn't let me collect the work. So what happens in that situation? How, like?
Oh, look, so lots of calls. I would ring, text, email, no luck. Then I realised, it was Sydney, it was lockdown, you couldn't fly to Melbourne, or, you know, I couldn't drive down there and get across the border, I think. So I just asked my Melbourne artist friends, who are all very lovely, one in particular who went with an art courier who I also know and have worked with for quite a few years, and they basically went to his gallery on the last day it was open in Fitzroy. And they had a list, you know, I'm pretty good with that with galleries. I'll always make sure I have a really clear catalogue and it's all written down of what they have. So they had that list printed out, and then they just sort of had the truck. And then when only, I think it was 12 or no, so five works were missing when they put the works back in the truck. And he wouldn't answer to where those five works were or respond. Oh. And by that stage, he'd actually blocked my number.
Oh my God. Okay. So then I guess, like, okay. So what are the next steps for you from here then?
I just kept thinking, it's Melbourne, he's there, I'm in Sydney. Why don't I speak to my accountant who's in Melbourne? So I'm with Lowensteins, and they represent lots of artists, and I thought they can help. So he put me in touch with a lawyer who then wrote a couple of letters of demand. I mean, this is the first time I've ever had to do this. It's quite expensive too. I mean, I think it nearly cost me up to $2,000 or just under
to get the letters, yeah.
Yeah, and that's really a normal procedure when somebody doesn't pay you. So that was for the paid works. The missing works, I was advised maybe that's a police matter. But the police, really, it's not an area they're familiar with, you know, the contract, and especially because artists and galleries don't have written contracts. I mean, it's kind of very old-fashioned and in the dark ages where it's this trust kind of thing. On my own, that wouldn't really go very far. I think when things, I actually just let it lie for a while because I realized I was trying, I just did not want it to make me stop making work and doing, because then it's actually a bigger cost where you've sort of spent most of your time spent on this issue, not in my studio making work for shows that I'm really excited about. So I got emails and texts and through quite a handful of other artists who were actually kind of, who weren't as represented by other galleries, who were in far more vulnerable positions, and they had the same story. I mean, we got the same emails back. If he did write back to us, the same tone, the same rudeness. And I think then we realised there was a pattern of behaviour had been going on for quite a while. It wasn't just a COVID situation. And it was a big... And then, I don't know, it went back 10 years, like, story. What? How does this happen? Like, how can you work, have a business? And, like, everybody knows and everybody talks, but, yeah, it just keeps happening and people keep showing with him.
Yes. So there needs to be, like, a Google rating scheme of gallerists of, like...
Yeah. Yeah, completely. Totally agree. Yeah.
I don't know how we start that, but and so one last, like, well, I can imagine it's been a really stressful, and like you said, it can take all the energy from you and then actually stop you from being in the studio and creating beautiful work for your next show, which, like you said, you're really excited about. But so it's this double whammy of lost work that's already been produced and then the potential for further lost work if you let it consume you. How do you stop this from happening next time? Or, like, what are the measures that people can put in place?
I would really, like, just after this experience and I think the old-fashioned ways of just, you know, trust and verbal kind of agreements have to go out the window. I mean, you really just have to have a contract and a sign by both parties of what the clear expectation. I mean, that's just if anything goes wrong. I mean, apart from just being really clear on both ends, it's just really helpful if something did go wrong, you have that to show police, you know, because that's the first thing they ask for, which I never knew. So I think that would be a really big step in the right direction, just doing that, yeah.
Always have something in writing, always have an email trail. Oh, my goodness, Lara.
Well, I know, I wish I listened to my parents.
You know, what did they say?
My dad would say, oh, you know, it's just like that's something, you know, you should. And I remember, like, years ago going, no, you don't understand. That's not how it works in the art world. You're an artist in the gallery. They do. This is the way, you know, it operates. But I don't think many other industries are that sort of vague on that sort of exchange. And it has, I mean, just to be fair, like, I've had gallerists who I've had that arrangement with, and it does work really well. And it is something, it's just when things go wrong. And this gallerist definitely, I think, sort of took advantage of that, you know, that area. So,
Oh, my goodness, Lara. Well, I hope the rest of the year, what's left of it, is I hope you get a bit of rest and relaxation from this time, and good luck with the recovery of works and closing out this chapter.
Thank you. And thanks for having me on to talk about it. It's a really important issue for artists. It is.